Welcome back to the Tanakh Study Center series on Neviim. In today's year, we continue our study of Sefer Yeshayahu together with Sefer Melachim. And our focus today will be on the big Korban Pesach that was offered during the first year of the reign of Chizkiyahu. Before we begin our share, let's explain why this event is important in order to understand what's happening in the book of Yeshayahu. Recall that Yeshayahu delivers tremendous rebuke to the Jewish people, and the impression you have is that the people during the time of Yeshayahu are terrible, they don't follow God. Recall as well the tremendous destruction is going to befall the Jewish people during this time period. And Yeshayahu has to explain why. In today's show, we're going to see an event that took place during the first year of the reign of Chizkiyahu. It's going to look like Am Yisrael is doing a tremendous job. It's almost baffling how after such a tremendous show of devotion to God, such terrible calamity happens within several years. Today's year, we're simply going to read about what happens in the first year of Chizkiyahu's reign and focus primarily on this big Korban Pesach that he offers and why that Korban Pesach is so important. Most of the details which we're going to discuss today are going to be found in the book of Divrei Hayamim. And as we've seen before, there are many details in the book of Divrei Hayamim which are not found in the book of Melachim and vice versa. Without going to a detailed explanation of why that is, in general, the focus of Divrei Hayamim is going to be events that relate to the Beit HaMikdash. Because the book of Divrei Hayamim is written in the beginning of the Second Temple period. And during that time period, the Neviim are trying to inspire Am Yisrael to rebuild the Temple, to rebuild Yerushalayim, to return to God in a proper way. And they're going to quote from events that took place during the First Temple period, which highlight either proper dedication to the Temple or neglect of the Temple, in order that the people of the beginning of the Second Temple period can learn from the events of the First Temple period. For that reason, we're going to find a lot of detail that has to do with the Temple, rebuilding the Temple, and returning to the service of the Temple, especially in regard to the Kohanim and Levim. We're going to find much more of that detail in the book of Divrei Hayamim than we would find in the book of Melachim. The book of Melachim, recall, is coming to explain why was it that the First Temple was destroyed. Yirmiyahu, the author of Sefer Melachim, is going to focus primarily what caused the Beit HaMikdash to be destroyed, what brought down the first monarchy. The prophetic purpose of composing the book of Divrei Hayamim in the beginning of the Second Temple period would be to inspire the people to take an initiative and build up Yerushalayim and the Beit HaMikdash in a proper way, and also for the Kohanim and Levim to take their leadership role as they had done several times during the First Temple period. With that in mind, let's take a look now at what transpires in Divrei Hayamim Bet in regard to Chizkiyahu. In chapter 28, we find about all the terrible things that Ahaz did, how Ahaz switched the policy of his father and grandfather, closed down the Beit HaMikdash for all intents and purposes, and brought in worship of the king of Ashur as his primary means of trying to appease Ashur in order that Ashur would help him in his battle against Ritzin, the king of Aram, and Pekach, the king of Yisrael. In chapter 28, Divrei Hayamim also tells us about some terrible civil wars that took place between Ahaz and Yisrael at that time, and also how Pekach ben Remaiel, the king of Yisrael, attacked Yehuda. In Pasuk Vav and Perek Chet, we hear about 100,000 casualties in one battle. And later on in Psukim Chet through Tetvav, we find a very interesting story about how the army of Yisrael, when they came and they defeated Yehuda, they took many captives. And the Navi comes, his name was Oded, as we told him Pasuk Tet, and yells at the people and rebukes the people of Shomron and tells them, God helped you defeat Yehuda because the people of Yehuda have sinned under Ahaz, but that doesn't mean you have the right to take these people and commit them to slavery. Instead, return them back to their homeland, and they listen to that Navi, and they bring the people that they had captured from Yehuda, brought them back to the city of Yericho, and from there they returned to the cities in the tribe of Yehuda. But that story alone gives us a very good understanding of how bad things were in Yehuda, how they lost battles to Pekah, how they lost to Ashur, how they tried everything for Ashur to help them, and it backfired against them. And you can appreciate now why when the king Ahaz dies, his son who takes over for him, Chizkiyahu, is going to change policy 180 degrees, and he's going to hope now that if we follow God the proper way, the way Yishael the Navi was yelling at Ahaz and telling him to change his policy, Chizkiyahu's hope is that change in policy now is going to bring about victory, especially in the military realm, against their enemies, both of Ashur and both in Israel. In chapter 29, in Divrei Hayamim, which we discussed in one of our earlier shiurim, we read about how Chizkiyahu, in the first year of his reign, comes into the Beit HaMikdash and begins to cleanse it from all its idol worship. He also gathers the people together, he gathers the Kohanim and Levim, and tells them we're going to establish a new Brit, a new covenant with God. This cleansing of the Mikdash took place very early in his reign, in the first month of his reign, which just happened to coincide with the month of Nisan. And then we're going to see something very interesting happening. Most likely, that's what the Gemara and the end of the fourth parak in Pesachim is talking about, where Chizkiah was Iber Nisan ben Nisan. In the month of Nisan, he decided to add an extra month. Ideally, you should only add the extra month of Nisan for a leap year only in the month of Adar, and add Adar Aleph, Adar Bet. What Chizkiah decided to do, because he just come into power and they just cleansed the temple, and they couldn't have offered the Korban Pesach in the first month because things weren't ready yet, therefore he's going to lay Korban Pesach, not just Korban Pesach, but even Chag HaMatzot by 1 month, and he's going to declare a new month of Nisan, even though Nisan had already passed. Why Chazal were critical of that, we're going to see in our study of chapter 30. By the end of chapter 29, the Beit HaMikdash has been cleansed of all idol worship, it's been fixed up, it's been renovated, the Kohanim and Levim have returned to the proper service, we have a choir organized, we're trying to return to the time period of David and all the reform that he had accomplished. If we look at the last Pasuk in Perek Chavtet, Pasuk Lamed Vav, verse 36, Vayismach Chizkiah v'chol am al echin alim la'am, ki pepitom haya davar. Chizkiah and all the nation were very happy that everything had been prepared as they had hoped, and they were happy because this all came very suddenly. It's this background that's going to lead to Chizkiah's decision to make not just a Korban Pesach, but a national gathering where his hope is that this Korban Pesach that he's going to offer is going to mark the beginning of a new regime and a new way of life and a new future for Am Yisrael. In Perek Lamed, we're going to read and follow the story. It begins as follows. Vayishlach Chizkiah al kol Yisrael v'Yehuda וגם איגרות כתב על אפרים ומנשה לבוא לבית השם בירושלים לעשות פסח לשם אלוהי ישראל. Chizkiah sends letters and invitations, not just to Yehuda, but also to Ephraim and Menashe, to come to the house of God, to do a Pesach to the God of Israel. Our understanding was, up until this time, that the 10 tribes had a Mikdash in Dan and Beit El, and that's where they celebrated their holidays, and Yehuda had their Mikdash in Yerushalayim, and that's where they celebrated their holidays. And this is going to be the first time in hundreds of years that there's an official invitation and permission for the tribes up north to come down to Yerushalayim to bring Korbanot. And here we find letters being sent to Ephraim and Menashe for the people to return to God and bring this Korban Pesach. In Pasuk Bet, Vayivatz HaMelech V'Sarah B'chol HaKahal B'Yerushalayim L'asot HaPesach B'Chodesh HaShini. And they decided to make this Korban Pesach in the second month. At first glance, this might appear to be simply what we call Pesach Sheni. But as we're going to see when we continue, that can't be, because in this month, which the Navi calls the second month, it's called here B'Chodesh HaShini, we're going to see them celebrating not only Korban Pesach, but also Chag HaMatzot. They're going to celebrate eating matzah for 7 days. If that's the case, this is Nisan, and it's not Iyar. The fact that the Navi, in Divrei Hayamim, calls this month, the second month, B'Chodesh HaShini, it's clear that they did not accept this decision by Chizkiah and his advisors to add the second month of Nisan. And therefore, when the Gemara in Masechet Pesachim, in the fourth parak, Daf Mem Vav, talks about Iber Nisan b'Nisan v'lo hodu lo, he added the month of Nisan within Nisan and they didn't agree to him, the source for them not agreeing is the fact that the book of Divrei Hayamim calls this month the Chodesh HaShini, the second month. In Pasuk Gimel, we get the explanation of why he does this. Here, the psukim seem a little more sympathetic with Chizkiah. Ki lo yachlu lasot be'itahi, ki akonim lo yitkatshu lemadai, va'am lo nesvu liYerushalayim. They couldn't do the Korban Pesach the proper time because the Kohanim did not sanctify themselves yet, and the people didn't have time to gather in Yerushalayim. B'amidu davar laver kol b'cho Yisrael mi Be'er-Sheva v'Adan levo lasot Pesach l'Hashem ha'Yisrael b'Yerushalayim ki lo l'rov asuk ha'katuv. They sent messengers out throughout all of Israel from Dan to Be'er-Sheva, which were the classic borders of Israel, to come to do the Korban Pesach in Yerushalayim, because most of the years it was never done properly. Ki lo l'rov asuk ha'katuv. In verse 6, we hear about how messengers were sent carrying letters in the name of the king and his ministers to all Yisrael and Yehuda, saying as follows to the people of Israel, B'nei Yisrael, Shuvu El Hashem, return to God, Elohei Avraham Yitzhak V'Yisrael, V'yashov El HaPleita Nisher Lech Nikaf Machi Ashur. If you do so, if you return to God, hopefully God will return those who have been exiled already by Ashur and bring them back to our land. Recall that during the time of Ahaz, both up north and also down south, we had the advancements of Tiglath-Pileser V had come in and taken over much of Yehuda and the 10 tribes. Some of those people probably were sent into exile as well. And in these letters that Chizkiyahu is sending, he's giving the people hope that if indeed we return to God, God will bring our brethren back. That will be a motivation for the people to listen to this letter. And then he gives them some rebuke and some musar in Pasuk Zayin. Al tiyu kavotechem ukachechem. Don't be like your forefathers, your previous generations, and your brethren, asher ma'alu b'ashem lehevotem, who rebelled against God. And therefore God gave them trouble, by name the Shema. Therefore he had brought destruction upon the land. Kasher tamarin, like you see. Ata, now, al takshu aprachem kavotechem. Don't be stiff-necked like your forefathers since the time of the desert. Tuyan b'ashem, give a hand to God. Ubao lemikdasho asher yikdish lo'olam. Come to his temple which he set aside forever. Vivdu et Hashem elechem. Serve God. Vyashov mikem charon apo. And if we do that, God's anger will go away from us. Ki b'shuvchem, pasuk tet, ki b'shuvchem al Hashem. If you return to God, achechem uvnechem l'rachamim lifnei shuvhem. God will have mercy on your brethren who've been sent into exile already. Lo shuv le'eretz hazot. Ki chanun v'rachum Hashem elechem. Lo yasir panim mikem im teshuv elav. God is merciful. He won't hide his face from you if you return to him. Now this promise is going to have a very big impact upon the people. Recall that terrible things have been happening. And up until now, the policy of his father Ahaz was to follow the gods of Ashur, was not to follow the God of Israel. And for that reason, the Nevi'im came and said, that's why you've been so unsuccessful in all your endeavors against Ashur. Chizkiyahu was promising them, if you follow God now properly, come to his Mikdash and Yerushalayim and serve him properly, and all your brethren who went into exile are going to be saved and are going to be returned. Those hopes are going to lead to a terrible problem several years down the line when things get worse for Yehuda, when Sancheriv comes in and destroys the big city of Lachish and almost destroys Yerushalayim, and many other cities of Yehuda are taken, and many people go into captivity. When that happens, in the eyes of the people, God did not keep his promise. And the Navi Yeshayahu is going to have to explain to the people, why is it that even though you've been serving God and made this tremendous Korban Pesach, why is it that God hasn't helped you, even though Chizkiyahu, your king, promised you if you return to God and serve him in his temple, he will come and help you. Again, that will be a topic which we'll have to discuss much more in detail when we read Yeshayahu inside. In Perek Lamed Pasuk Yud, in verse 10, we find the initial reaction of a lot of the people to this invitation. These messengers went up north, up to Ephraim and Menashe, even as far as north as Zvulun. Zvulun is in the area near Haifa. The people, when they heard this invitation, most of the people in the northern tribes made fun of them, were laughing at them, and didn't take this whole invitation seriously. On the other hand, there were some people from the tribe of Asher and from Menashe and Zvulun, nichnu'u. They gave in a little bit. This means that this invitation met a very mixed response. Some people took it seriously and came to Yerushalayim. Other people laughed about it and were very cynical about it. On the other hand, in Yehuda, the response to the invitation was much stronger, much more positive, and they all came together to follow the commandment of the king, to follow God and come and perform this Korban Pesach. In Pasuk Gimel, v'yasfu Yerushalayim amrav. Large amount of people came to Yerushalayim, lasot et chag ha-matzot v'chodesh ha-shini, to do the holiday of Chag HaMatzot in the second month. And that's what we mentioned before. This is a proof that in the eyes of Chizkiyahu, this was still Chodesh Nisan. But the fact that the Navi calls this Chodesh HaShemi tells us that Chazal did not accept this extra month. And therefore, Iber Nisan B'Nisan V'lo Hudulo. Pasuk Yedalet, Ve'ekumu, Ve'esiru et ha-mizbechot asher b'Yerushalayim, Ve'ko amakatrot esiru, Ve'eshlichu enach ha-kidron. Then, in Pasuk Tedvav, Ve'eshchatu ha-pesach, they shechted the Korban Pesach on the 14th day of the second month. The Kohanim and Levim who had prepared for this big event, as we heard about in the previous chapter, they were prepared and they brought not only the Korban Pesach, but also Olot, also burnt offerings to God to thank him for this moment. Now we're going to explain why the Levim did the Shechita and not the owners of the Korban Pesach themselves. Pasuk Yud Zayin. There were many people in this group who did not cleanse themselves properly. They didn't take care of their Tumat Met. They didn't do Paraduma. It takes 7 days to get rid of Tumat Met. People maybe weren't aware of all these laws, and they came to Yerushalayim, they didn't have time to cleanse themselves properly, and therefore, many people were still Tamei when the Korban Pesach was brought. Therefore, any owner of a Korban Pesach who was not Tahor gave his Korban to a Levite to do the Shechita, to shech the animal properly. Pasuk Yud Chet. Because most of the people, Rabat mi Ephraim u'Menashe, Yisachar u'Zvulun, and the majority of those who came from Ephraim u'Menashe, Yisachar u'Zvulun, the northern tribes, lo hitaharu, they didn't cleanse themselves properly. This is an amazing pasuk which we just read. Let's explain what happened. There's a law in regard to Karban Pesach. Not only does it have to be eaten when a person is tahor from any type of tumah, you can only shecht it for someone who is tahor. And therefore, if a person is not tahor, if a person is not properly ready to bring a korban to God, it really doesn't help if someone else shechts the korban for him, because he can't eat the korban anyhow. But Chizkel faced a terrible dilemma. Here he invites all these people, thousands of people invited to come to Yerushalayim. This is going to be the big turnaround event. And now, he can't put himself in a situation where he tells them, you know, it's very nice that you came, but you can't participate in this korban. So he's not going to allow them to shech the korban, but he can't tell them you can't eat from the korban, even though they weren't tahor. And how does he explain this to God? He explains to God as follows, Kitpalel Chizkel lehem lemor, Yechizkel, the king, prayed to God saying, Hashem atov yechaper ba'ad, God who is good, he'll atone them, he'll forgive them. Now this approach sounds a little modern. Anyone working to try to bring non-observant Jews back into the realm of religion, the same problem faces anyone who wants to invite someone who's non-observant to a Shabbos meal knowing that he's going to drive. Telling someone to come to shul knowing they're going to drive to shul. Is it better that they drive to shul and break one law, but at least come to shul and be part of a Jewish community? Or is it better they not break the law and stay home, but then they wouldn't have any Jewish experience at all? That's a very difficult question that faces any rabbi in any modern community where everyone isn't totally observant. How to deal with each situation, that everyone has to ask the local rabbi. But we can appreciate the situation that many rabbis are in today, in the situation that Chizkel was in. And here we have a situation where Chizkel said it was okay, and he prayed to God that God should forgive them. On the other hand, we see a hint here in Chachamim, definitely in the Gemara and Pesachim, that Chazal were not so crazy about all these things that Chizkel did. Remember, he changed the month. He had an extra month when he wasn't supposed to. He's sort of breaking the law here and there in the hope, seeing the bigger picture, that this will bring the people back to God. One can argue either way, did Chizkel do the right thing or the wrong thing? The next pasuk seems to imply, though, that Chizkel was doing very good here, at least at this time period. Pasuk Yitet, Kol levavo hichin lidrosh Elohim Elohi avotav v'lo ketarat ha-kodesh. Listen how beautiful this pasuk Yitet is. Kol levavo hichin lidrosh Elohim Hashem Elohi avotav. With his full heart, he prepared himself to look and desire to find God, the God of his forefathers, v'lo ketarat ha-kodesh, not at the highest level of Torah ha-kodesh. His intentions were excellent. On the other hand, it wasn't what we'd call nowadays glatt kosher. In the next pasuk, pasuk chaf, is very interesting. Vayishma Hashem el Chizkiyahu, God listened to the prayer of Chizkiyahu, vayirpa et ha'am. And here it means he healed the people. It's not quite clear what that means. Radak explains it means he forgave them. According to Radak, Chizkiyahu's prayer to God, that God looked the other way and forgive them. God listened to Chizkiyahu and forgave the people. Chizkiyahu wants to make sure this becomes not just a joyous moment, but also an educational one. And therefore, he talks to the Levim in order to teach the people. Pasuk Chabet, Vayidaber Chizkiyahu aleiv kol ha-Levim, ha-maskilim sechot tov la-Shem, v'echlu et ha-mo'ed shivat ha-yamim, mezabchim zivchei shlamim, u-mitvadim la-Shem elohei avoteihem. Not only do they celebrate the Levim, the maskil, they teach the people, sechot tov, it seems like they're teaching them Torah at the same time, and also mitvadim, they also admit their sins to God that they've left them, they've gone the wrong way, and now they want to return. This celebration was so big that Chizkiyahu decides to make an additional 7-day celebration. Then they do another 7 days, another 7 days of Simcha, very similar to what happened when Shlomo first dedicated the Beit HaMikdash. And then we have a summary about the tremendous amount of offerings and korbanot that were brought at this time. Ki Chizkiyahu Melech Yehuda Hirim Lakal Elef Parim. The king alone gave 1,000 cows and 7,000 sheep. And then the ministers also, they donated 1,000 cows and 10,000 sheep. And the Kohanim had purified themselves. The entire congregation that came, the Kohanim and Levim, and everyone had come from all of Israel, even from up north, and all the strangers who had come from everywhere in the land of Israel, and those living in Yehuda, they all had this tremendous simcha, this joyous occasion. The last line here tells us that there was never such a rejoicing since the time of Shlomo Melech when he dedicated the Mikdash in Yerushalayim. And finally, Pasuk Chav Zayin, Vayikumu HaKohanim HaLevim Vayirchu Et HaAm, the Kohanim HaLevim came, stood up and blessed the people, Vayishma B'Kolam, Vatavot Tfilatam Lo Monkot LaShamayim. God heard the prayers, this is going to begin over a decade, a prosperous time for Yehuda. Yehuda is going to be safe from Ashur. And in the first decade, this seems to work. Only 6 years after this event, Melech Ashur comes and destroys the northern tribes. Yehuda is saved. It's not taken over by Ashur. Sennacherib only destroys the 10 tribes. He's not able to bring down Yerushalayim. At least for the first decade, this return to God is complete. It's good. God answers the prayers. He listens to them. Ashur leaves him alone for the next 10-15 years. This Korban Pesach that we read about in Divrei Hayamim is not the only Korban Pesach described in this book. Several chapters later in Perek Lamed Hei, in chapter 35 in Divrei Hayamim Bet, we're going to hear about a Korban Pesach that took place some 67 years later during the reign of Yoshiyahu. And very similar to the early time period of Chizkiyahu, when Yoshiyahu comes into power, he also changes policies. His predecessor, Amon, his father, and his grandfather, Menashe, were very bad kings. They also closed down the temple. They were also very angry with God. Yoshiyahu returns to God in a manner very similar to Chizkiyahu. He also gathers the people, renovates the temple, gets rid of idol worship from the country, and gathers the nation together in Yerushalayim to bring a big Korban Pesach, very similar to what Chizkiyahu did. But what's very interesting there, at the end of chapter 35, we also compare the Korban Pesach that Yoshiyahu had done to an earlier one. But instead of comparing that event to the time period of Shlomo HaMelech, in Divrei Hayamim Bet Perek Lamed Hei, in chapter 35, Pasuk Yud Chet, verse 8, it says, "V'lo nasa Pesach kamo b'Yisrael mimei Shmuel Hanavi, v'chol mechei Yisrael asher asu kapesach asher asa Yoshiyahu v'akodim v'alavim v'chol Yehuda v'Yisrael hanimtza v'yoshvei Yerushalayim." They were told that the Pesach that Yoshiyahu does, there was nothing like that since the time of Shmuel. Most likely that relates to the events in Shmuel Aleph Perek Zayin, when Shmuel gathers the people in Mitzpah and gets them to return to God, and they do vidui and they fast and they cry out to God and say, "We're going to get rid of all these other gods and return to you and worship you properly." Of the very good years and the reform that Shmuel undertook that led to the establishment of the monarchy. In our chapter, in chapter 30, when we talk about the Pesach that Chizkiyahu does, we compare that to that celebration that we had in the time of Shlomo when they dedicated the temple. If you want to look carefully at that comparison, what was known for in the time of Shlomo was the tremendous amount of wealth and the tremendous amount of animals that were offered at that time. It was so great in the amount of korbanot and offerings that were brought. Not maybe as much in regard to the tshuva that the people had done. And here again, we might have another little indicator that even though the tshuva that was done in Chizkiyahu's time was very praiseworthy and began very well, there was, might have been a little bit too much of an emphasis on how many animals you're bringing, how much food you're eating, how much prosperity is being shown off, as opposed to the tshuva that takes place in the time of Yoshiyahu, which seems, at least in the beginning there as well, to be a bit better. Again, we're going to have to return to all these topics when we read Yeshayahu inside. Today we simply can begin to appreciate how strong this movement, the Chizkiyahu, began, how it was interpreted in the beginning that God had helped them against Ashur because of this return to God, and how difficult it's going to be to explain to the people later on, after 14 years, when Sennacherib returns to Yehuda and begins systematically to lay siege on all of its walled cities and is able to capture and defeat the city of Lachish, and almost able to take Yerushalayim, but Yerushalayim is going to be saved at the last minute. Those events are going to be critical in the conversations between Yeshayahu and the people. Especially, it's going to help us understand the opening parak of Yeshayahu, where he has to explain why is destruction happening, even though the people seem to be doing fine. In today's year, because it's a week before Pesach, we simply want to focus on great Korban Pesachs in Jewish history. We want to focus on this Korban Pesach that Chizkiyahu had done, since very few of us actually ever studied the book of Divrei Hayamim. I thought it was a nice opportunity to see about earlier Korban Pesachs that were brought, they're described in Tanakh, and how Korban Pesach represents a time when the Jewish people gather together and can turn over a new leaf. I don't think it's only for a technical reason that the Korban Pesach celebration gathering was chosen, because it just so happened that Chizkiyahu came into power in the month of Nisan. This could relate to the very reason why God chose and orchestrated the events that the Jewish people come out of Egypt in Nisan, because Nisan is a time when spring begins to blossom again. The winter's over, and we begin to see trees growing, trees blossoming, the grain becoming ripe. And when spring is in the air, it's a time for a new start. Nature starting over again. And just like agriculture begins a whole new cycle every year, so too, the Jewish people in their relationship with God can turn over a new leaf and begin a new cycle. Chizkiyahu is using that time of year, the spring, as well as the beginning of his new regime, to say, here's a new opportunity, here's a new chance, let's learn from the mistakes of our past, let's turn over a new leaf, let's begin with a new future. Hopefully, as our holiday of Passover comes close, and we begin now and prepare for Pesach, hopefully too, in our time period, Pesach can be a time of renewal, of return to God, serving Him properly, with the right dedication, taking the right initiatives, and hopefully ours can be not only successful like the first years of Chizkiyahu, hopefully ours can be as successful, even better than Chizkiyahu, and can return and bring us to a much more successful redemption for many more years than Chizkiyahu was worthy of. In the next year, we're going to continue our study of Yishayahu during the time period of Chizkiyahu and focus on what happens in year 14 and all the difficult events that take place when the city of Lachish is sieged and the conversations that take place between the messengers of the king of Ashur and the people in the walled cities.